Were you hunting for a man who was personally a stranger to you, whose name was Martin Luther, and you were to find a man whose name was John Wesley, you would know at once that he was not the man for whom you were hunting, unless he had changed his name. If you knew him to bear the character of an honest man, you would continue your search until you found a man wearing the name of the man you desired to see. Then, if you wished to find the Church of God, 1 Corinthians 1 and verse 2, 2 Corinthians 1 and verse 1, and you find a church calling herself the Roman Catholic Church, the Episcopal Church, the Baptist Church, the Presbyterian Church, the Methodist Church, or any other unscriptural name, is it not enough to cause you to suspect that you have not found the true church and continue your search a little further? There are doubtless many good persons in each of these sectarian organizations, but this proves not that any one of them or all of them together is the Church of God. God had a people in Babylon, but he admonished them to come out of her, that they partake not of her sins and receive not of her plagues. Revelation 18 and verse 4. But we are told that there is nothing in names. Then why not as well expect salvation through one name as another? Speaking of Christ's name, Peter says, "Neither is there salvation in any other, for there is none other name under heaven given among men whereby we must be saved." Acts 4 and verse 12. But if there is nothing in names, we may as well expect salvation through the name of Beelzebub as through the name of the Lord. If there is nothing in these denominational names, why think so much of them as to prefer to wear them rather than the name that honors Christ our head? Do they not tend to keep up divisions and gender strife among good people? And if there is nothing in them, why not give them up? Let us not strive after words or names to no profit. For if there is nothing in them, we may give them up and lose nothing. But by exchanging them for the name authorized of God, we may gain much. The church is said to be the bride, the Lamb's wife, Revelation 21 and verse 9, and as such should wear the name of her bridegroom. The head of the woman is the man, 1 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 3, and hence she honors her head by wearing his name, and she dishonors her head when she refuses to wear his name and assumes another. Suppose a citizen of your neighborhood were to marry a wife, and when she is called by his name, she objects to it, saying, "There are so many branches of my husband's family that for the sake of distinction I prefer to be called by some other name," and thereupon assumes another, perhaps the name of some other man of her acquaintance. What would you think of her, and how would you treat her if she were your wife? Would she not have dishonored you as her husband, dishonored him whose name she wished to assume, and dishonored and disgraced herself? And would you not regard her as unworthy to be your wife or enjoy the privileges of your house? Would she not have placed a foul blot upon her character that would render her unworthy the confidence and respect of the virtuous and good of every age and clime? And would you not feel a little like telling her to go and live with him whose name she preferred to wear? What say you? Then if the wife of a citizen would so far dishonor her husband and degrade and debase her by refusing to wear the name of her husband, will it be less dishonoring to Christ for his bride to refuse to wear and be called by his name? And will it be less a blight upon the character of his bride for her to assume and wear other names than his? Will he own that organization as his bride before his father in the great day of marriage that has, owns, and willingly wears some other name than his? Will he say, "My wife hath made herself ready, and to her was granted that she should be arrayed in fine linen clean and white, for the fine linen is the righteousness of saints"? Revelation 19 and verses 7 and 8. Is the assumption of other names than that of the husband the righteousness of saints that is comparable to fine linen, clean and white, with which the church is to be clad as a bride adorned for her husband when he comes to receive her? By the way, what will our Baptist friends do for a name now? They adopted the official name of John the Baptist as their denominational name, preferring to honor the servant of the bridegroom rather than the bridegroom himself. But the Bible Union, to which as a church they are fully committed, wiped the word Baptist from the revised edition of the New Testament, giving us immerser instead thereof. Thus, John the Immerser, see Revised New Testament, Matthew chapter 3 and verse 1. Will they keep pace with the translation and adopt the name Immerser Church? This would be rather wanting in euphony, to say the least of it. But the word Baptist is not in the revised scriptures put forth by the Bible Union at all. They have very correctly and fully translated the original into Immerser, and every scholar, if honest, will approve the translation. Then, will they give up the name Baptist? The late John Waller of Kentucky saw this in prospect while president of the Bible Union and said, "If a faithful and pure version of God's holy word takes from me my denominational name, then I say, let it go, let it go, let it go." Are his surviving brethren capable of rising with him above every earthly consideration to a reception of the name given in a pure version of God's word, to the exclusion of everything else? To this question, time will furnish an answer. Another means of knowing persons and things is by their age. If you wish to find a man known to be 40 years old, and you meet a lad of 10 or 20 years old, or a man whose whitened locks, furrowed cheeks, and bowed frame betoken that the weight of many years is upon him, in either case you will know that this is not the man you wish to see, and this assurance will be made doubly sure if he wears not the proper name. The Church of God, like everything not eternal, has its age. And as the age of a man is reckoned from the time of his birth, so the age of the Church is computed from the time of its organization. We have seen that this took place on the first Pentecost after the crucifixion of the Messiah. Any organization, therefore, which began at any other time, either before or since, is not the Church of God. Every theory teaching that the Church began at any other time before or since is wrong, surely wrong. Were I or an angel from heaven to teach that the Church of Jesus Christ began in eternity, in the days of Abraham, in the days of John the Baptist, it would be error and unworthy of reception. Again, the record says that Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, and had anyone appeared at the time he came claiming to be the Messiah, who had been born anywhere else, he would have been known to be an impostor. Even so, we have seen that the Church of God was organized in Jerusalem. Any organization, therefore, that began at any other place is not the Church of God. Should we find a church which began in eternity, in the Garden of Eden, in Mesopotamia, at Sinai, in the wilderness of Judea, at Augsburg, at Westminster, at Geneva, at Philadelphia, on Cumberland River, or at Bethany, we would know it could not be the Church of God. Again, the Church of God was built upon the foundation of the apostles and prophets, Jesus Christ himself being the chief cornerstone. Ephesians 2 and verse 20. Should we find a church claiming to be built upon the experience of uninspired men, however wise and good they may have been, it cannot be the Church of God.